You are listening to Punk'd Podcast episode 547, three episodes away from the story episode. And listen, people, we're back to the regular style after 2 or 3 weeks of being wacky. It's news, and more news that you can use on the Punk'd Podcast. Let's go. And welcome back to the Punk News Podcast. We are here with myself, features editor John Gentile, but we're also here with news editor M. Moore. What's happening? What's going on?
Hello. I have an Instagram account now. Woo! So if anyone wants to follow me.
I love that. I'm following you immediately after, as soon as we're done with this.
M. Moore, what is your Instagram name?
Oh, yeah, that would probably be, it's E. Moore. So it's M, but with an extra E.
M with an extra...
Oh, so E-E-M-M-O-O-R-E.
At Instagram. Check it out, people. I'm sure there'll be lots of exciting content. And also, speaking of someone that's always got exciting content, we're with Hallie Bullet. Hallie Bullet, what's happening?
Listen, nose to the grindstone, people. We got to talk about the news. People want us to talk about the news. We say we're punknews.org, so they, you know, let's talk about the news. I'm into it.
Let's talk about the news. A couple of housekeeping things. First of all, in 3 weeks is going to be Story Week, and I'm very excited about Story Week. And I was thinking, and what we're going to do is we're going to do three categories, and I think we all agreed we're going to do happy, sad, and or poignant. We'll say happy, poignant, and weird. So we're each going to do three stories, and we're going to alternate. Like, one person's not going to tell them in a row. And I'm thinking, like, I know Hallie Bullet's got all these crazy stories. I'm like, man, I don't think I can beat her. Not that it's competition, but it is. And I'm like, I don't think I can beat her. So what I'm going to do, instead of trying to out fantastic or out laugh Hallie Bullet's story, I'm going to truly work on my storytelling. I'm working on Mark Twain style here. You know what I mean? The whole ride is going to be, you know, like Air Force One. The whole movie's the climax, you know. But and then I thought, well, I don't want to like set Hallie at a disadvantage by like giving like these unrealistic expectations for listeners. But then I'm thinking, well, maybe I do want to set Hallie at a disadvantage so I can win the story competition. Hallie Bullet, are you nervous for the story competition? Because honestly, I think you've got the goods to deliver here.
No, you know, I'm not trying to toot my own horn. I do have the goods, but I think I've sufficiently handicapped by myself by saying that I am only going to tell music stories, because honestly, my most weird and outlandish stories are like related to my theater career and all the weird and bizarre like gigs I did, especially when I was like between shows as a performer. I did like some of just the weirdest like corporate gigs. Like, I have crazy stories, but I think if I stick to music, those aren't necessarily my most like outlandish stories, but they're at least like more like related to the podcast. So I think I've sufficiently handicapped myself, and I think we'll all be it'll be a level playing field.
Well, why are you handicapping yourself? Is it because you don't want to tell the stories, or you're scared that your story will be too good?
No, I just don't know if like the punk news like crowd is like so excited to hear like me talk about like random theater like that I did that they don't probably know the shows or like no, I don't know. I feel like it's for me I feel like it's better to stick to music.
Fair enough. And more. Are you nervous? Are you excited? Because you are at a disadvantage because you have less years to acquire crazy stories and wild stories. So how are you feeling? But then again, yeah. Young people, honestly, your best stories generally happen when you're a young person. So M. Moore is currently in the thick of her best storytelling gathering time. So maybe M. Moore's at the advantage.
I don't know. I'm going to try to make them sound good. Like, I'm in the same boat as you, John. I'm going to try to make them sound really good. And then hope they land.
Do you guys think we should do like every story will be like John M. Halley, or should we like change it up every category? What do you think?
Oh, interesting. Change it up.
So maybe we'll like roll a dice before each category, and we'll do it in that or something like that. Yeah, the dice of destiny. One other thing is either this week after this episode or next week, we've got a new bonus episode. It's going to be my interview with Ellen Foley, and Ellen was very cool. We talk about recording with The Clash, recording with Ian Hunter. We talk about recording with Meatloaf. We talk about her being the principal on Ghost Rider, the singing principal on Ghost Rider. So be sure to tune in if you like the bonus episodes and check out Ellen Foley. In our interview with her and her talking about her entire career and her new album that's coming out at the end of the summer.
I cannot wait for this interview. I'm very excited.
Honestly, it's not like mind blowing. And then I was kidnapped by Nicaraguan rebels and then machine gunned my wife. You know, but she's done a lot of cool stuff. And honestly, like, I think if the listeners don't know, Ellen Foley is a singer. She sang on Paradise by Dashboard Light. She sang on a bunch of Clash albums. So she's had a crazy career. I think people might assume that she either liked or didn't like certain things. And in her interview, we'll learn that a lot of stuff that I thought she would be really proud of, she's not proud of. And stuff that like you thought would be like silly, she's like way into. So it's a pretty interesting interview. And I'm glad we could sort of give Ellen Foley just kind of respect, if you will, because she's done a lot of cool stuff and she's had a crazy career so far. So that's coming up. And let's hit the news. You can always use that podcast at punknews.org. This is from Drew. Here's what Drew has to say. I always like the album-centered episodes. If there is no news, then I don't mind if that takes a backseat to other discussion. I always like learning about new records. I think, though, because John has such a different taste than everyone else, you might always run into a scenario where John doesn't like what everyone else likes and everyone else doesn't like what John likes. Does that matter? Maybe the disagreements is more interesting than not. Keep it up and more special episodes, please, from Drew.
Interesting. I mean, we all liked each other's albums last time. I'm trying to think if I've ever disliked an album that you've done on a album. I don't think I have. I think I liked the Flock of Seagulls.
Yeah, well, of course. I mean, everybody likes Flock of Seagulls.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't done that many of them, but I've liked everything that you've brought to the table.
Mm. Well, maybe next time we all said next time, like this time we all kind of did like each other's stuff more or less. I think next time we're each going to try something more challenging, and that'll be interesting, I think, for sure.
And then everyone will hate everyone's shit, and we'll get in a giant fight, like a virtual fist fight about music.
I remember one time me and another punk news writer were kind of like butting heads a little bit. It wasn't anything major, and he's like, "Well, the Melvins suck," and I'm like, I don't care. I know the Melvins rule. The fact that you don't like them just means you lose credibility, you know? So, this is from Lauren. I'm so excited that shows are now open. Are you worried anymore? Do you feel safe? I can't wait to see Teenage Bottle Rocket and Mr. T Experience. This is going to be the best pop punk summer ever. Do you think shows will be more full than usual? Will people go crazy? What show are you looking towards? Pop punk, pop punk, pop punk. And that's from Lauren.
Yes. Pop punk. I don't know. I'm being a grandma about it. I am still a little worried. I'm like, But, you know, that being said, I'm going to go back to shows. I'm just, I am. I don't know why. I'm worried people are going to, like, be, like, behave like, I don't know. I don't have a good analogy. Behave like something that's bad, behaves badly.
You mean like people will be like drunk and cause fights, or
yeah,
are you?
Yeah, or just like going like extra crazy in the pit because they have like a year and a half of like not being in the pit stored up and like anxiety and anger. I'm just like, I'm worried people are gonna go hog wild and that I'm not gonna be down, but I'm still gonna go. I'm just gonna stand near the exit. I don't know. How are you guys feeling? It's probably going to be fine. I think I'm being like, I don't know why. I don't have the personality of a nervous Nelly, but for some reason I am being a nervous Nelly about this.
No, I mean, it's been a while since shows and you know, people, well, depending on where you live, people can go, you know, really crazy. I might go to a show tomorrow, but I probably not just because it's a pain. It's Rodney Anonymous, Dead Milkman is playing John and Peters in New Hope. And the people who know John and Peters, it's a really tiny club, like 30 people. And it's famous because Ween plays there a lot still to this day. Well, not now, not a lot, but Ween famously started there and they still play there once in a while. But it's kind of a pain to get there. And honestly, I was really – 3 days ago I said, I'm going to Google KRS-One to see what he's up to these days. I Googled it. He played a free park show in Wilmington on Saturday, 2 days after I Googled his name. And I was like, oh, my God. He, you know, it's so frustrating. Anyways, I'm excited. I think people probably will go – I do think people are going to go nuts and crazy. But I think if you hang in the back and are just cool, then you'll be fine. And you know, I mean, listen, the world's a dangerous place. Be smart, but don't be overly cautious, if that makes sense. You know, that's my opinion.
That's the public service announcement.
That's the public service. I will say, one of the worst mosh pit things, I wasn't even moshing. I was just standing there. And I'm pretty sure it was a dwarf show or it was a Spitz show. I can't remember. I think it was the Spitz. I was standing there and this dude jumps up, or maybe it was the Chats. I think it was the Chats because that crowd was especially obnoxious. And this dude jumps up on the stage, like the Chat. I like the Chats. I think the Chats are cool, but their audience is like so frat bro-y. It's the most frat bro-y audience I've ever been in, you know. And I guess I was shell shocked because I hadn't been in a frat bro-y audience in a long time. And so like they treat like stage diving like it's a ride. Like honestly, like. Like if you're out of high school, you probably shouldn't stage dive just cause it's a little cheesy, honestly, after a certain age, you know. And like these dudes are like jumping up there stage diving, and they keep like if you really have to stage dive, then whatever, do it once. It's not a ride, it's not the slide, you know. And these dudes keep stage diving, and this one dude jumps up, and somehow he got bounced upward, and he goes full plank in the crowd. Somebody grabs his torso, they whip him around like a pinwheel, and both his legs like snap me right in the ribs. I'm like, oh, that hurts.
Oh,
you know?
No.
And I'm like, wow, man, that really hurt. But you know, whatever. And so I'm fine. And I walk out to my car and I sit down in my car. I'm like, oh my God, I am jacked up. Like the pain shot up like all up and down the side of my body. You know what I mean?
That was,
so I'm looking forward to that again. So anyways, and more show watch. Are you psyched? Are you not psyched? What's the perspective?
When shows can be done safely, I'm psyched. I don't really know what's going on with the show scene up here, but hopefully it's good. Again, hopefully everyone is safe and everything works out well. The next show, like the show I have tickets for, is in 2022. So I'm pretty sure that's going to happen this time. So that's exciting. So waiting for that. And that's My Chemical Romance. So it's going to be good.
Oh, you're going to be living your best life. And that makes me so happy. The only shows I feel like I've ever legit worried I was going to get hurt at, two of them were Fishbone shows.
Fishbone.
Yeah, I love Fishbone. Two of them are Fishbone shows. That kind of makes sense, right? Like people go bananas for that band, and it's like mostly I think dudes in the crowd, right? So I felt like I was, and then randomly, like many years later, a Masked Intruder show at South by Southwest. I like really thought I was gonna get hurt at that show, and I was like, these are like ridiculous joke songs about like being a thief. I was like, why am I? why is everyone going so hard at the show? These people are wearing like snow like masks. Like, why am I? Like, I don't know. It felt very incongruent to me. I was like, I'm not like at a like a sick of it all show. Like, why is everyone going so crazy right now? I wasn't sure what was going on. It was still a great show. But Chris like literally had to rescue me from that pit. Like he had to grab me around the waist and like pull me out. Like I was getting like pummeled. Like I was like just getting boxed about the ears. And like I was like disoriented.
Those Mass Intruder shows. You know, I'm glad you. I was thinking about this a few days ago. I was thinking about Slayer, like circa 1997, when Slayer wasn't at their musical best, but they were maybe at their musical most intense, and they were certainly at the height of their fame. And in Philadelphia, like it. You know, people like in the 90s would be like, man, you weren't there in the 80s. It was really dangerous in the 80s. And now I'm like, you weren't there in the 90s. In the late 90s, it was really dangerous in the late 90s. Like Philly shows are so less dangerous than they used to be. Like Slayer, like in Philadelphia in the mid to late 90s was crazy. And honestly, like now if I went, I'd probably be bummed out and annoyed. But when I was like 16, I'm like, this is the greatest thing ever. Because like there would be these gigantic roided out dudes, right? And a lot of them probably kind of sketch. And by kind of, I mean super sketch, you know? And like in the audience, they would have these girls in like basically bikinis walking around selling Jaeger shots. And now if I saw that, I'd be like, someone tell that little girl to put clothes on. But when you're 16 and the girl's like 19, you're like, wow, you know? And they're selling Jaeger shots for like $9 each in these tests. They sell them in test tubes for some reason, or sometimes like those little dentist, you know, paper cups, you know. Yeah. And these dudes would run up and like, I'll take 7 Jaeger, and they'd be like, that's $63. and they would like slam Jaeger, right? And these huge roared out. And like, before the show would happen, like you'd hear these dudes talking, like, I'm gonna really knock someone out tonight. I'm gonna get in a fight. And like now, if you're like that, you'd be like, what? This guy is so full of BS. But like back then, like those guys seriously went to Slayer to fight. Like they went to Slayer to fight, not to hear music, to literally brawl, you know. And so like you would get there and like Philly would back then, not now, Philly would push back the show times. Like concerts would be slated to like doors at 7, show at 8. The show wouldn't even start to like 9:45. And people that went to get drunk are like hammered. And like these like roided out dudes, like Slayer would come out, or even the opening. Well, during the opening act, they would get drunker and get kind of more aggressive, and the Slayer would come out. And the level of aggression, speed, and power from like a terrible new metal band that opened for Slayer. Like what was that terrible band? Well, I don't need to name a band. And all new metal bands are terrible. So pick whatever bad 90s new metal band you want. You know that speed and power is like a 7. Slayer comes out, it's like a 47. Like the jump in power at Slayer at that time was huge, and the pit would literally erupt. There's literally like in the Electric Factory. It's not called the Electric Factory anymore. If you know the Electric Factory, it's about a 2,000 person club. There was no safe space in the Electric Factory. Like the entire floor was like a war zone. You know, and up front was like the worst. And like these roided out dudes would just like literally as soon as like Slayer would come out, they'd play one note, and these huge dudes would just start punching each other. I saw one guy like his arm was bent like after the first song I saw someone like the guy's arm was bent the wrong way. Another guy I saw like his tongue was hanging out of his mouth because he must have like uppercut it while he had like his tongue sticking out or something. I remember the balancers were literally fist fighting for 5 hours or 4 hours. Like then I thought it was like the coolest thing ever. Now I'd be like, oh man, there's poor bouncers. I'm now I'd be like, everyone's here for the music. Why is everyone getting like, why are you guys fist fighting? You know, we should be having fun. But back then when you're 16, 17, when you're a dumb boy, you're like, wow, this is like coolest thing ever. And like, it was dangerous and it wasn't safe. And I don't know if my perspective changed or not. Like in a way it was cool that it was dangerous because you can say like what other music could conjure these emotions? Like that's how powerful Slayer is. Like Slayer is so powerful, they can make guys want to beat each other up. Like that's how powerful the music is. But on the other hand, no, it's just a bunch of knuckleheads being knuckleheads. Then why can't we just appreciate art without making a dangerous spot? So I'm of two minds, you know, but like Slayer in the 90s was a dangerous place. And it was really cool. I don't know about now. I really couldn't say, you know.
Shows definitely felt more dangerous back then, for sure. I'm like really glad shows don't feel like that anymore, unless you go see Masked Intruder at South by Southwest in the middle of the day.
well, listen, no one messed with Masked Intruder. Let's play a song, and then we'll come back and we'll start the news proper. Who wants to play a song?
Oh, I can play a song.
What do you got?
All right. So this is a buddy of mine, full disclosure, but I really do love this song. So this is Jeff Palmer. He's like a staple of the New England pop punk scene He used to play in a band called The Guts that was around for ages. And then he plays in like Kurt Baker's band. If anyone knows Kurt Baker, who's like, you know, this is all like, these bands are all in kind of like the pop punk kind of garage scene, like up in New England. And I think a lot of these guys have been, I think, really embraced by that Little Steven's underground garage channel. Like, I know Kurt Baker stuff gets played on there all the time. And so, yeah, so this is like my good friend Jeff Palmer. This is like he's got an upcoming solo album called Charts and Graphs that's coming out on, it seems like it's maybe the vinyl's coming out on one thing and something else is coming out on the other, but it's in some format, it's going to be out on both Stardom Records and on Rumbar Records, which run out of Boston. That's my good friend Malibu Lou. And I don't know, I think this song is like catchy as hell. It's called This Monkey. So it's definitely like a nod to that old Pixies song, This Monkey's Gone to Heaven, because he changes it up and says this monkey's going to hell. Mm. But yeah, so this is Jeff Palmer doing This Monkey off Charts and Graphs.
And that was Jeff Palmer doing This Monkey off Charts and Graphs. Excellent choice by Halle Bullock. Okay, let's start kicking off the news. Let's see here. Honestly, people, I'm not a hater, and I'm a music fan, but I think I might come off as a hater this episode. And I like being a fan, but there's a lot of stuff this episode I'm not down with. And here's the first of many: Metallica. They're re-releasing the Black Album. I'm certainly not a Metallica diehard, and I'm certainly not a Metallica defender. But pretty much everyone agrees the Black Album. Well, people all agree that the Black Album is either when Metallica became terrible, or they made an okay detour, and then just never got back off that detour. Anyway, they're re-releasing the Black Album in line with the previous deluxe reissues. It's got the album, it's got demos, it's got a live album. So if you're a fan, I mean, I will say Metallica treats their fans really good, and that when they do deluxe reissues, they don't do bullshit reissues. You know, you get the album, the demos, the outtakes, and the live album. That is really the best way to do it, and Metallica does a really good job with that. So they're putting out a deluxe version of the Black Album, but they're also putting out a tribute album to themselves where they had 53 bands covering the 10 songs on the Black Album. And the one of the many weird things about this tribute is that it'll have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 Enter Sandman covers in a row. And then 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 Sad But True covers in a row. And I'm not sure, like they'll have like the same cover like in a row 6 times by different bands, which is strange to me. I will say that the proceeds of that all goes to charity, which is nice of them. So you can't dog on them too much. The other, I guess, interesting thing is the bands covering Metallica on this include Mac DeMarco, Weezer, Sam Fender, Rina Sawayama, Royal Blood, St. Vincent, White Reaper, Biffy Clyro, The Chats, Pup, Corey Taylor, Flatbush Zombies, Diet Sig, The Neptunes, which of course is Pharrell, Phoebe Bridgers, let's see who else here of note, My Morning Jacket, Darius Rucker of Hootie, Idols, Terry Glazer, Imelda, and of course my dog, well not my dog, a artist I'm extremely a big fan of, Off, doing their first release in, I don't know, man, 5 or 6 years now. Off covers Holier Than Thou, interesting choice. I'll kick it off. The Black Album, I think, is a pretty bad album. Enter Sandman is a good track. There's a lot of slow down, BS, boring stuff on it. It's just not a great album, you know, and it is when Metallica jumped the shark. And like I said, I don't really care because I'm not even a huge Metallica fan, so I don't care if Metallica's good or not. I love Slayer way more than Metallica, Celtic Frost. I don't care about Metallica that much, so it doesn't really bum me out to make bad albums because I just don't care about them. I think this tribute album is bizarre in that, like, it looks unlistenable to me, and that they'll have like 6 covers of the same song in a row. Like, I don't know what I'm supposed to do with that. You know, I get that they're doing it for what do you call it? When you give money to someone, not tribute, charity. I think we're charity.
That's particularly hilarious, given that you just said it.
I know. No one ever said I gave intelligent commentary, just somewhat explosive commentary. I think it would have been better if they'd done like 4 albums and each album was a cover of that album or something, like not in a row. I was going to buy it for the Off track, but it's like $50 after shipping for CDs, you know? And so I'll probably get it eventually just because I love Off and I want every single thing they ever put out. But it just looks unlistenable to me, like completely unlistenable. And they don't even cover every song off the Black Album. I think they might have missed 1 or 2, but even if they don't, it's bizarre. Like, I feel like the person organizing this tribute had no idea what they were doing at all, you know. And instead of just having like 7 covers by 7 different bands of the same song, they should have done, let's do a collaboration. St. Vincent, you sing the first verse, you know. Cage the Elephant, you sing the second verse. Or maybe you guys sing together. I feel that would have been a lot more interesting than just having the same song covered 6 times in a row. Another thing is there's like almost no metal bands here, and there's a couple of punk bands, and the rest is pop music. And I will commend Metallica for looking outside of the metal realm and saying, you know, we want to treat our art as art and not as heavy metal. That being said, I really do feel like Metallica has kind of turned their back on metal, and I think this would have been a much more interesting record if they had some metal bands on here, maybe some metal bands from before their time, like Deep Purple, maybe even like, you know, Toe Naomi, maybe Celtic Frost, who actually is contemporaneous, you know, Blue Oyster Cult, Deep Purple, Judas Priest, Alfred is a huge Metallica fan, you know, so I think it would have been cool if they had some actual metal acts on this, and instead it kind of just looks like someone that said we need to, you know, get as much coverage as we can, and so we'll report on all these pop and I guess cool indie rockish type bands, and that way that will get covered by the pop and indie rock blogs. And I think it would just be cool if they actually did have some metal bands on here, because that would be nice to kind of take it full circle and kind of pay tribute to the genre that made them what they are. So I think this is, it's nice they're giving the charity, and that's cool. And honestly, Metallica does treat their fans really well. And that there's a lot of fan club only stuff. The reissues are really well done. I just think this tribute is terribly formatted, like terribly, you know. Hallie, what do you think?
I have such a different take on it. I mean, first of all, I have to say, I don't like, I think this comp sounds really cool. And but I need to be honest, I will never listen to it because I just don't like Metallica enough to like care that. I mean, maybe, I don't know. I'd probably stream it. I think it's so cool that there's like different artists doing the same song. I feel like that's so that never happens on a cover album. And like what I really like is that I think it means that people are really gonna like I don't know, put their own stamp on it because they're going to be trying to differentiate their cover from the next like six covers that come after it. I don't know. I think there's something about it that's like encouraging creativity. And I think it's going to, I just don't feel like anyone's done it that way before. And so I'm interested in it. Do you know what I mean? Like, I think it's interesting. And what I hope is that it means that people got to cover a song that they really like, as opposed to like, it's like if you have to cover the whole album, it's like someone gets stuck with like the shitty like ballad that no one likes. You know what I mean? Like someone has to cover a song that they hate. Like hopefully this means everyone got to like play a song that they were like, well, this is the one on this album that I really connect to, which I think seems cool. I do just kind of want to know like, how did they pick these bands? It really does just seem like such a random hodgepodge of bands. And so I get what you're saying, John, where it does just sort of seem like a PR person kind of picked the, you're like, because Metallica is not like a fan of Diet Sig. Like who picked Diet Sig? Like it seems very arbitrary. And yeah, like maybe they just were trying to get some buzz bands from like a bunch of different scenes. But I don't know, from like an art perspective, I don't know. I do think it could end up being kind of cool. I don't know. I might be wrong, but I think it could be cool. And I'll never, almost definitely not find out because I won't listen to it. Em, you like metal. You are probably more qualified to talk about this than I am.
I love metal. I hate Metallica with a burning passion. I really don't like the band. I mean, like, I get how people really like them. I understand it. I get how, you know, people, it means a lot to people. Yep, good for you. This is not my cup of tea because there's so many bands that sound so much better than them. But the record is they have 12 covers of Nothing Else Matters. Oof. 12. So yeah. But like there are bands on here that, you know, I want to listen to their cover. Like I want to listen to Pup. I want to listen to Off. The Chats might be kind of cool. Diet Sig would be kind of neat, you know, kind of stuff like that. And then, yeah, it was kind of, the trail. I like the trailer cause it gives you kind of a preview of a bunch of albums. And I think it's like J Balvin. He's doing Latin music, and it sounds really interesting, but I don't know if how well, you know, like why he's there unless he had a, well, I guess everyone was influenced by the band in some way, like they have something, but yeah, his cover sounded really interesting, so like I might check that out, but yeah, I'm not listening to all of that. That's way too much Metallica. It's nice that they're donating it to charity, like they're donating the proceeds to charity. I think that's great. The video for the Miley Cyrus cover, I'm pretty sure did you guys watch the video?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm pretty sure the cowboy is drinking Metallica branded whiskey.
Oh.
Two? So it's just like product placement on something that's supposed to be nice, you know, and it's just, the Miley Cyrus cover was interesting. Like her voice sounds good, but it's way too much. Like it seems kind of like self, congratulatory almost, like, oh, look at us. We did this, we made this album, you know, so let's, I don't know.
I know what you're saying. Yeah, it's like, yeah. Anytime someone like organizes a tribute to themselves, it's a little bit like, well, but I don't know. I think if you're Metallica, you can kind of get away with it, right? Because you're Metallica.
Like, yeah. Everyone knows them. And,
listen, yeah. if you can get away with saying anger, you can get away with anything. You know what I mean? So.
I know what you're saying, though, Em. There was, like, a Spanish guitar kind of cover that was in the trailer that I'm with you. I thought it sounded amazing. And I also was surprised that at some of the, like, more country-style covers, I thought sounded like they could be really interesting, too. But, John, you're right. It is weird for it not to be metal. You know what I mean? It's almost like they're saying that metal is a limited genre and that another metal band couldn't cover the song and like put their own spin on it or something, you know?
I just don't know the purpose of, like, do they expect people to listen to Seven and the Sandmans in a row? Like what are you supposed to do with it? You know?
I don't know. As like an art experiment, like, yes, maybe there's something really cool about that. Like, let's see how many different ways we can stretch this song. You know, I do think there's something like valid about that.
Do you think it's almost like a Lou Reed or like a noise thing? Like the point is to punish you and like not to be enjoyed. Like how much punishment can you take? You know?
I don't think so, but I believe you truly that it would be an exercise in torture for you.
Yeah. Well, speaking of exercise and torture, the Interrupters, they're going to put out a live album. The live album is called Live from Tokyo. It's out already, actually. It was announced like a week before it came out. And they're also releasing a movie called This Is My Family, which is sort of a documentary about the Japanese tour and the Interrupters as a whole. And, well, I'll kick this off again. You know, the Interrupters, I'm always so torn on. I mean, I said something that's torture. I don't hate the Interrupters. I actually liked the third album, although the third album to me is kind of like back in college, my one friend was talking about the Black Eyed Peas album that just came out, and it always stuck with me. And his statement was, it's a cool album, but the most you're going to get out of it is the first time you listen to it. And each time after that, you get less and less out of that. That's kind of how the Interrupters are, in that, like, it's cool and it's fun and poppy and it sounds really good, which I guess is the point of music. But it does feel like a put-on, and the Tim Armstrong presence is so heavy. Like you can't get – like, it's like – I don't know if it's Tim or them. I don't know if Tim's, like, saying, you must sing this way. Or they're like, Tim, we have no idea what to do. What should we do? And Tim's like, sing this way, you know. I kind of feel like this band would be better if they didn't have the overbearing ghost of Tim Armstrong affecting both how they sing and how they record. And their like, my favorite Interrupter songs are ones where it's clearly just Tim Armstrong speaking as Tim Armstrong. But it's Amy Interrupter singing the lyrics. She'll be like, me and Lars were hanging down in Berkeley. It's like, that's Tim. That's not, you know, when we were in Operation Ivy. And so there is kind of this the Interrupters are almost like a doo-wop, or not a doo-wop, but they're almost like the Ronettes or one of those studio Phil Spector constructed bands, except for I would argue like the Ronettes actually have a little bit more talent. Although I do like the Interrupters, and honestly, Amy Interrupter is a fantastic singer. She's a good performer. I think she's cool. It just seems a little artificial, you know. So do I need to see a movie about them spinning about – oh, and actually, this is another thing too. Like, this is my family. As if – like, when people usually use that phrase, it's like, you know, we've been through the hard times, the ups and the downs. You know, we didn't have a lot of money sometimes, but family's what got us through. Where the Interrupter story is, we're people that were – this is a band that was constructed in the studio, and Tim Armstrong wrote most of our songs for us. And we went to immediate semi-stardom. You know, like, where's the tough times? You know, what if the movie is just like great thing happening after great thing? That's the whole movie, you know? But, you know, I really don't want to dog on the Interrupters too much. When they first came out, I kind of hated them. Then I liked them. Then I less liked them, but I still liked them. I still liked them. I don't need to watch the movie, but I will say is I do wonder if the Interrupter party is over, because all three of their albums are sequels in that it's essentially the same album, just a little bit better each time. So what is there left for the Interrupters to do, I wonder? Moore, Interrupters, yay, nay? And will you watch This Is My Family, the movie?
I've never really listened to them. I've heard, I think, two of their songs on the radio. And, like, they're really catchy, like, they're really upbeat and, you know, all that, so I can understand people getting into them. But, yeah, like, it's like there's a barrier almost or something, and I think, like, that goes back to, like, the authenticity thing, like you were saying, John. Like, I think there's something kind of there, but, yeah, I don't really know a lot about them. I from the tra like the trailer is okay, but it didn't really it wasn't like like the Sparks trailer or like the Chumbawamba trailer or like the polystyrene trailer, those like grab you and it's like, oh my God, I need to see this movie. And this was just kind of like, oh, okay, cool. So yeah, I think if that's what you like to watch, go for it. I might check it out. I might, but probably not, just because I don't really. They're not my favorite.
It's weird, right? Because like a documentary, I don't know, like it seems like they just made a commercial about their band, right? Because like a documentary is normally like someone outside of the thing has decided that there's a story that's interesting and worth telling, and they decide through the art of documentary film to tell that story. This is just like a bit, again, talk about paying like producing a tribute to yourself. This is like, but they're not Metallica. They're a smaller, younger band. I mean, listen, I could be proven wrong. Maybe when this movie comes out, maybe something super crazy happened to them when they were on tour in Japan, but it just sort of seems like real kind of cheesy, right? Not to be mean. Again, like they seem to have a lot of fans, and I'm sure that the fans of this band will be real, especially with a year and a half of no shows. I'm sure there are people that are going to be like so excited to watch this, but as a musician, like I would not have done this. I think this is a weird, this is maybe a bad look. You know what I mean? Just to be like, also, it just seemed like so much of it was just like the quotes in the trailer. Again, maybe the trailer's just like badly edited, but like it was just like, there's just something about live music that just makes you feel so alive. Or like something was like, yeah, duh. Like, I don't need you to make a movie to tell me that live music is exciting. Like, everyone on fucking planet Earth knows that. Like, it just didn't see, it seemed quite a corny to me. I could not get into this. Again, listen, not to just like piecemeal everything, but like, I do think, for people that were starved of their like Interrupters live show experience for a year and a half, I bet this is going to make some people like really happy. But not me.
You bring up a great point. Is I've got this Paul McCartney DVD that I bought used. It's called like This Is Us or something, or like This Is Paul in the World or something. And it's a really good live Paul McCartney performance from like early 2000s or late 90s. Except for like every three songs, they've got like Dave Grohl or like Flea saying, Paul McCartney, he's the legend. Like every third song is, or like fans are like, Paul, Paul got me through my darkest days. It's like you don't have to convince me that Paul is great. I bought the DVD. Like I have it, But like you don't need to tell me that Paul is great. I'm watching Paul be great. Stop pausing Paul being great to tell me that Paul is great. And it really made me hate the DVD. So this is kind of the same thing. And honestly, let's get a little bit more serious here. And is this fair or not fair to bring up? Of course, the Interrupters sort of do have that deep, dark, ugly past. Hallie, are you aware of the Interrupters' deep, dark, ugly past?
I'm not invested enough in the band to know really much of anything about their past. What do they got going on? What skeletons are in the closet?
Well, should I leave them in there if nobody knows?
And do you know?
I do, yeah.
Ooh. Well, it depends if you just, it depends if it's like worth talking about. If not, I can just like Google it when we're done.
So we will make the judicial determination with this conversation whether or not this topic it should be brought up again or should not. Before the Interrupters were the Interrupters, Amy Interrupter was a pop singer and she had some kind of all right pop albums. However, early on in her career, she was way into Alex Jones and she wanted the Alex Jones show and was like agreeing with a lot of the wacky stuff he was saying. To be fair, this was before Alex Jones was ultra insane and just when he was regular insane, you see. And so that dark past has followed her for her entire career. And actually, I made sort of a boneheaded move, but maybe it wasn't. When the second Interrupters album comment came out, somebody said, "You want to interview Amy Interrupter?" I was like, "Yeah, that'd be awesome." Also, I want to kind of talk about some of the Alex Jones stuff just to see like what the deal was. And they canned the interview, and I thought, well, maybe I should have just said yes and then sneak attacked her. But on the other hand, I don't want to. Well, I don't know, man. Like on one hand, if you're a journalist, then it is your job to root out the truth. But on the other hand, do I need to be, bumming out Amy Interrupter, because you went on the Alex Jones show? So the question is, she went on Alex Jones show and made some comments that a lot of people thought were uncool. She didn't say anything beyond the pale. She didn't like, well, I don't even want to say what she didn't say, but she didn't say anything wretched. She just said a lot of stuff that a lot of people might think weren't cool. You could Google the videos, although some entity is very good at taking down those videos, even though they keep popping back up. Is it fair to hold Amy Interrupter accountable for comments she made when she was like 18 or 19 on the Alex Jones show? Or has it been time enough and she's been cool and hasn't said anything wacky since then? Is that unfair to bring up?
Do you know, like, has she gone on record to say what her attitude is about it now?
No, she will. She has specifically not talked about it and will not talk about it.
Well, then I think it's I think it should follow her around because she, you know, it's like she needs to either like own, you know, I don't know. I think you need, if people are upset by a thing you did, I do think maybe you just need to say like, well, I was young and I, if I had it to do it over again, I wouldn't do that and I don't stand by the things that I said. Or you say like, no, that's who I am. But then again, like, I don't know, it's that whole thing, right, with politics and music. Like, does she, I mean, I guess she dragged herself into politics. I'm going around and around in circles. I don't know what to make of this. Well, help me.
Yeah, I think she should clarify where she stands now. I think that would put a lot of it to rest.
Yeah.
Well, to be fair, Billie Eilish recently had somewhat of a similar thing. And honestly, I'm usually very pessimistic about these kinds of things. But maybe the tide is turning to a more reasonable level in that like Billie Eilish is only like 22 or 21. But like some video arose when she was like 13. She was lip syncing to some hip hop song where a Tyler, the Creator song where he uses a slander for Asian people. She was lip syncing. And then on Twitter, some people were like, you know, Billie Eilish should be, you know, canceled because she said this when she was 13, even though she only lip synced it. And then she eventually said an apology. I don't even think she needs to say an apology. I'm really glad the things I said when I was 13 aren't on the internet. And then
for real.
It seemed like most people were like, listen, bro, she was 13. You know, you kind of get somewhat of a free pass when you're 13. You know what I mean? She wasn't 19. She was 13, you know. And she was singing a song. So, you know, maybe the tide is turning back to what John Gentile considers to be more reasonable. I don't know. So anyway, the Interrupters, I don't think we solved it, Hallie and Em. I think they're as much an enigma as they were before, to tell you the truth. But I don't hate them. See, the thing is, I don't hate them. If I saw them live, I should go see them live, because if I see them live, I will either love them or really hate them. You know, and I don't hate them, but, you know, I don't know, man. Yeah. She's a great singer. She's a great singer, but they're a great band, but she really is a good singer. But everything seems so calculated. That's what that's what, you know, trips the wire.
Speaking of corny. Like, the whole thing just smacks of, like, kind of a corniness, right?
Yeah, it feels like the Monkees, doesn't it? That's what it is, you know? Well, speaking of a band that's not the Monkees, Chubby and the Gang. Following their extremely lauded first album, Speed Kills, from 2020, they released the first track from their new album. The new album's called Mutt's Nuts, and is out on August 27 via Partisan Records. The debut single is Coming Up Tough. And it seemed like people dug this. Hallie Bullitt, I famously was very much on the fence on Chubby and the Gang. I believe you were pro. Are you still pro?
Like, I am. I mean, I'm not, you know, I'm not like around my house, like rocking out to Chubby and the Gang. But like, I am consistently entertained by the stuff they put out. I'm consistently kind of, I find it interesting. I just think there is something about them that I think is cool. I'm waiting for them to like put out that one song that I just like have to listen to over and over again. That hasn't happened yet, but there's something about this band that I really do like.
And that's what I think about it. M?
Yeah, I thought the song was good. I thought the video was kind of neat. Where they have like kind of the live show set up, and the camera is on the floor at one point, and everyone's kind of like leaning over it and like yelling and stuff. Like, that was really cool. I like the name of the album, and I like the art for the album, the album cover. I think that's great. But yeah, I think it'll be good. I'm looking forward to listening to it. Because so far, like, the songs are longer than on Speed Kills, so I kind of wonder what they're going to do, like, if it's, like, an evolution of sound, and it kind of sounds like it is, and, like, the lead singer's voice is great, like,
it's awesome. And the backups are always great, like, Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. I was agreeing with you.
no, you weren't. That was kind of it. That was the end of my sentence. So.
See, that's what I did. I interrupted and I ruined your train of thought. Sorry, Em.
No, that really was the end of my sentence. That was perfectly timed, actually.
Well, I'll talk because I never interrupt anybody on this show. I'm still where I was before. Is I think this song's pretty good, but I think it's for your debut single. I think it doesn't have quite enough character. I think it's a little too mid tempo, and I think it's a little too long. I like it. I just don't love it. You know, and people are like freaking out over Chubby and the Gang, and I just don't quite hear why it's popping so much. Aside from the fact that it's a little retro, it's a little, you know, working class docs UK punk. And people love it for that, but I'm like, well, I've got UK subs, you know, I've got GBH, you know. I guess this is a little bit more AC/DC-ish, which of course is Australian. But it's like, I wonder, is this people just playing dress up too much? Not the band, but like fans. Like people are like, oh yeah, the 70s were cool, you know. I don't know, I like it, I don't love it. And so that doesn't make me a hater, but like you know, in modern culture, you have to really love everything to the nth degree. Or you're a hater, and I just like it. I don't love it. I'm hoping this band can wow me because I do like it, and I'm just waiting to hear, you know, the mind blowing track and the mind blowing album. I think they can do it, but will they? I'm not sure. Let's see here. Speaking of things that did blow my mind, check this out. So we debuted a unusual but extremely cool thing at Punk News. There's a fellow who is now sadly passed away, but he passed away at 101, so that's a pretty good run. His name is Willie Dorsal. And who's Willie Dorsal? Willie Dorsal is a Creole fellow that lived in Louisiana, and he was born, of course, in around 1920 or so. And he, before World War II, he would play his fiddle at what they call Creole house dances. And a Creole house dance is very much a house party. They didn't have concert venues then. They didn't really even have necessarily bars out in the country at that point. So when people wanted to have fun on a Friday or Saturday or Sunday, they would go over to someone's house and there would be a fiddle player or whatever. And Willie was one of these fiddle players. And because, you know, it was before the internet, of course, and because the country was so out in the middle of nowhere, like a distinct culture developed and a distinct fiddle playing developed. And Willie was one of the people that developed this distinct fiddle playing styles. When World War II came around, he went off to World War II. And then I guess sadly when he came back, everyone from his community basically moved to Texas. And that was kind of the end of the Creole house dance tradition. He stopped playing fiddle. And then when he was 99, one of his relatives said, Uncle Willie or Grandpa Willie or whatever, here's a fiddle. And before he passed away, he recorded a number of songs or the style that he would play at these Creole house dances, which hadn't existed for 70 years at the time that he put them down or so. And so we debuted a couple of the songs collectively. They're called Willie Zydeco at Punk News. And I was really excited to debut this. Honestly, a lot of the Punk News comments have been real kind of dicks lately when it comes to kind of cool stuff, but everyone was pretty much cool with this. And I just thought it was really cool to hear like this literally long lost style. And he actually speaks a little bit between each of the songs. And it's so cool to hear him. And I'm astounded that at 99, when he recorded this, he was still like a nimble fiddle player. Hallie, what do you think?
I think this is super cool. I wanted to ask you, like, how did this come to Punk News? Like, how did you end up debuting it?
I'll give you the long story. So back when premieres were like the big thing in 2014, 2015, and back when websites were very, very selective about what they would and would not premiere, I made up the rule, not the rule. I say, you know what, everybody, let's just, to be ultra punk, let's just premiere whatever anybody gives us, we'll premiere it. You know, we'll just open the floodgates and premiere anything, you know? And so we premiered like dance music and people hated it. And I loved it, you know? And I was telling the pubs just like, listen, you're going to hate this. I'll do it if you want, you know? And they're like, yeah, we want you to do it because they didn't have anywhere else that picked it up, you know? So they could go back to their client and say, look, we got you a debut, you know? So we premiered anything and everything, and I thought it was pretty cool. But then what happened was it backfired for a while because what publicists realized, we would premiere anything, so they would give all the good stuff to everyone else and give us the crap, you know. And so I started to get kind of bitter about it. And so then this is kind of when I nuked all my relationships with all the publicists. I'm like, I stopped premiering. I stopped premiering everything pretty much, you know, except for a few publicists that were really cool. Monica Seed is one of them. Howard Wolfling is another one. They kind of gave us some good stuff and some stuff that they needed to unload, which I don't mind. I don't mind giving a forum to someone that has no forum. That's kind of punk news. But give me some good stuff too, you know. So those publicists, some others. They were wise enough to mix it up instead of just giving me all the junk and none of the good stuff, you know. And also we get all these last minute premieres like John, we need to premiere this in 17 minutes. Can you do it? And what that means is you asked everybody else and then you came to us, you know. So I really start to get bitter about that. Anyways, so this came from Howard, and I pretty much debut whatever Howard gives me. And Howard actually used to be in a punk band or pro-punk band called the Slickies. And he was in a couple of other punk bands like Africa Corpse and some other bands. And really, his thing is really like folk music and like indie rock. And actually, through him, that's how we got Cucumbers type stuff. So anyway, I'll premiere whatever Howard gives us. But I actually asked for this because I thought it was such a weird and unique and special thing that I wanted to premiere. So I said, Howard, can we get anything this 101-year-old? Well, I said, Howard, can I interview this dude? And he's like, he's been dead for 2 years, John. I was like, oh. You know, so he said, you want to premiere a track? I said, most definitely. So that's how we got it.
Nice. Yeah. I mean, it's really fascinating. Like, and from – it's just one of those things where you're like, I'm just so glad – this got recorded, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought it was really cool. I did have the question of like, you know, I don't know much about fiddle playing. And I was like, if you haven't played an instrument in 80 years and you're like almost 100 years old, are you still good at that instrument? Like, I was kind of like, I wonder if I knew anything about fiddle, I wonder if this would sound like real, like you were saying, John, like, is it like super deft, like fiddle playing, or is it just like really interesting from like a historical perspective? And like, I don't know the answer to that, you know?
I don't know that this is good fiddle. You know,
yeah.
I didn't know that it's what he was playing back then. Like, he might be like, oh, I remember it, grandkids. But listen, I'm certainly happy to continue the memory of Willie, who it was a living piece of history and more.
Yeah.
Did you hate Willie like Hallie, or did you love him like that?
Stop right now.
This was so cool. This was like nuts. The story with it too, just the, you know, he was playing and everything was good, and then he had to go to war, and then everyone just like left, and how it took so long. It's so nice that someone like remembered and gave him a fiddle, you know? It was like, oh, you know, I know you like doing this, so here you go, and everything, and so nice he was able to record the music and, you know, preserve, like, the memory of the Creole house dance, and then, like, his own memory and everything, and I think that's really, really nice that it was all on his terms in that sense. Yeah, it was much better than I was expecting. I'm in the same boat. I don't know a lot about fiddling, but this was really cool. So I think it was good.
Well, there you have it. Willie will live forever in our memories. Em, you want to play a song, or you want me to play a song?
Sure. I can go, unless do you want to go?
Go ahead. Okay. Give it a kick.
All right. So I am going to play a remix, and the remix is called Vile X Spells, and it's Vile Creature doing a remix of Spells by Backwash. So Vile Creature, I've talked about them a little bit. So they're an experimental doom metal duo out of Hamilton, Ontario, and their songs are really, really good, but they're really, really long. So this is a shorter version of it, and it also highlights Backwash, who just so the remix was released to celebrate the release of Backwash's new album, I Lie Here Buried with My Rings and My Dresses. So that was released over the weekend, and Spells was originally on Backwash's 2020 album, God Has Nothing to Do with This, Leave Him Out of It. So this is Violex Spells. Vile Creatures remix of Spells by Backwash. Mm-hmm.
bet you I'll be safe for weeks. I'm only human even though it doesn't feel that way. I'm broken, useless in the morgue and I can't leave the place. I think I'm soulless in my soulless. I'm hopeless, I don't know if my emotions buy an hostage by the office while the doors are open, closing and there's no one in the corridors. At my reflection, like, yeah, this is so fun.
And that was Backwash. We're already running long on this episode, which is good. So we were going to talk about one of my favorite bands, Chrome, but we'll save that till next week. Chrome's got a new album coming out, but there's a lot of complications there, which we'll discuss next week. Meanwhile, Vile, V-I-A-L, as opposed to V-I-L-E, V-I-A-L. And more, tell us about Vile.
All right. So they are a Minneapolis-based indie punk band, and they are amazing. I really like them. So they released a video for Violet, which is their new song, and it's not a whole cover. It's an original song. So they released Roadkill a couple weeks ago, and I played it on the podcast, and it's nuts. It's really good. It's more punky. It's angry. It's great. Violet's like a bit poppier. Still has some punk edge and everything. And the song made me really happy. I can't say how much I love the video. The video is great. It's it takes place at a roller rink, and it's like these two people, and like they see each other and they're trying to like get each other's attention, and then one person like she skates over to the other and like flips a cake, and it's great. The cake flip is the perfect thing. It was so good. So it's so nice to see something like a video that's just like so like happy and like joyful and kind of gives you like hope in a way somehow, you know. It's just, it's so good and everything. So I'm really excited for their upcoming album. That's coming out in July, so I'm really enjoying this band. What did you guys think of Vile?
Yeah, John, was this for you?
I dug it. I'm not going to run out and buy the album, but I will say it's cool. I really like the second half of the track. What I think is most cool about this is sometimes I get bummed out that people like listen to Cocksparrer and bands that sound exactly like Cocksparrer, you know, or The Clash and bands that sound nothing like The Clash but are trying to sound like The Clash but instead sound terrible. And so this band is really cool, and that this is like punk rock really evolving and becoming something new, but it's still punk, it's still vibrant. And also I like the video is really well, like I always think we're going to talk about Teenage Bottle Rocket in a hot second, and we'll talk about the comparison between the two videos, but this video is really well done. It looks like a pro video, but it's an indie video. And so I thought it was cool. I think it's cool how there's kind of a blending of indie rock, pop, and punk. Is this my favorite band of all time? No, but I like to see punk growing and evolving and doing new things, which means punk is still alive and growing and changing and doing cool things and doing what it's supposed to do.
John, that's so funny. I had the same thing. Like, I didn't think so. I didn't care so much about the song until it hit. You're right. Like in the second half, it hits that like that like where they she's just repeating I disappoint my mama for you, and it like the song like really hits its stride then and becomes I think like a lot more exciting. Before then I thought it was like a little bland and a little poppy, but man, this video is great, right? And that cake flip is so good. Yes. The video is just like really, and like you said, it does, it makes you, it's like a great little love story, and it does make you feel happy without it being like a saccharine thing. It's like just very, the video is very, very cool and very well done. Yeah, the song, I like I said, like it's most of it was just not totally like catching my ear. And then just that there's that one kind of refrain that did kind of like hit me between the eyes in a way that I was like kind of happy about. So yeah, I don't know. I liked this, and the video was awesome.
Well, let's counterattack that with Teenage Bottle Rocket, long running pop punk band, perennial punk news favorites. They've got a new album coming out on August 27. It's called Sick Sesh, and they debuted with a video called Ghost Story. I don't dislike Teenage Bottle Rocket. It's a little too pop punky, a little too sugary for me. I don't quite hear the danger. I don't quite hear and listen, people like Teenage Bottle Rocket. I mean, I like Mean Jeans. You know, Mean Jeans doesn't really do anything radical, but I don't know, I like Mean Jeans a lot. Teenage Bottle Rocket is always a little too sugary for me, a little too smoothed over, a little too produced. And I got to say, the song is fine. It's not terrible. It's if I heard it on the radio, well, you won't hear it on the radio, but if I heard it on somebody's, I don't know, Spotify mix, I'd be like, yeah, that's a pop punk song. The video looks like a flash animation from like 2003. Like the video is not great. Like the animation itself looks somewhat amateurish, and if that was the intention, all right, but not, it doesn't look like amateurish in a good way. It looks amateurish in that, like, they just couldn't quite get the graphics down. And I'm not trying to bust on anybody. Maybe I'm getting too soft in my old age. Not like the video doesn't say a whole lot. The animation is not that great. I feel like if they wanted to do like a retro type video or something, they could have done a lot better job. And I don't know, was this a funds issue? Was just sometimes things don't go according to plan, or just what they wanted? By contrast to the Vile video, which looks like it was filmed by MTV circa 1997, you know, like or 1999, uh-huh. Like incredible video quality, incredible sound quality. Great, you know, stage setup, whereas this is just kind of like a flash like that guy Sound Fingers from like 2001, 2002. It looks like that. Hallie Bullet, what do you think?
I mean, it's like a classic Teenage Bottle Rocket song, like specifically like a classic Cody song, right? Like he's singing about like the subject that he's been writing about since he was in the Littlingtons, which is like dead things coming back to life. Like he loves to sing about dead things coming back to life. It's just like it's classic Teenage Bottle Rocket. If that's your thing, I think you're gonna like this song. Yeah, the video I could have taken early. It seemed like a pandemic video, right? Like it seemed like they would have done something cooler if there hadn't been a pandemic. But yeah, you know, I'll tell you this. The first, so these guys are also friends of mine, and I love them. But I didn't know them yet when the first Teenage Bottle Rocket album came out, and so it was just an album that I got, and I listened to it once and I didn't really think much of it. And then my boyfriend at the time had a van, and the CD got stuck in the van's like stereo system. There was like an entire summer where like if we wanted to listen to music that wasn't like the radio, we had to listen to, in fact, actually, I think the radio would not work because there was a CD in the CD player. So we just kind of cranked it over and over again. And like, it became like the soundtrack to our summer. And like, we loved it by the end. Like we absolutely, just through sheer repetition, we were like fucking like loved that album. So I don't know. Yeah. I have just like a lot of like personal and like nostalgic fondness for this band. And I think this is very much just like in the vein of what they do, you know?
Mm-hmm. Em, what's your stance?
Yeah. Like I thought it was, you know, like it's fun kind of, I guess it's catchy. The one thing I really liked with the video was like all kind of the like hidden sort of things or whatever, like things going on in the background, like at one point the ghost guy has the like the Necronomicon shows up, and then it's like this book is not to be fucked with written on it, and is the face and the whole thing. So thought that was great. There's a Texas Chainsaw poster on one of the walls. There's a Green Day poster on one of the walls. Creature from the Black Metal Lagoon is playing on one of the TVs. So like I liked stuff like that. Like that was really cool to see. Like throughout the video, just like little things added in the background. But but yeah, other than that, like I've never really like they're okay, but I haven't really gotten super into them.
Listen, as long as we're talking about this video and it has a ghost in it, I just need to interject to say that I'm so mad, John Gentile, that you and Sam did not ask more follow-up questions to M revealing that she does actually maybe believe that a ghost stole her My Chemical Romance CD and that there is a quote-unquote cursed song on the CD. I'm so mad that there were not more follow-up questions. We don't have to talk about it now. It's already been a long episode, but I'm just saying we are circling back to this at some point.
I agree. You know. Listen, Hallie, your interview game can't always be on the top. I failed the previous listeners by not following up on M. Moore's ghosted CD, but we will, and we will get to the bottom of this supernatural, psychopompic horror that M. surely is terrified with by and doesn't want to talk about. But we will make her talk about it so she can work through it, and we can all get through this together.
I actually have a story with like something happened while we were filming the podcast, that specific podcast too. So it's like there's a layer to this. Yeah.
All right. I'm very excited. When it's not this late at night, we are delving into this this subject matter.
Indeed, and we will. We're already running a little long, so let's wrap this up with one last news story. Colleen Green, she's got a new album coming out. It's actually her first proper album since 2015. The new album is called Cool, and the lead track and video is called I Want to Be a Dog. Hallie Bullitt, Colleen Green, where do you stand?
It wasn't like my favorite Colleen Green song, and like I if this is like the song that she's like leading with off the album, it didn't like make me feel super excited about it. But I don't know, I do like her. I'm sure there will be other stuff in the album that I really like, and I did think it was fun. I don't know, I didn't know exactly how to feel about it. Like the chorus is clearly like you know, she's just like taking the Iggy Pop chorus of I Want to Be Your Dog, and she's just changing it to I Want to Be a Dog. There's something funny about that, right? Like, I don't want to be your dog. I just want to be a dog. Like, there is something funny about that. But I don't know. Yeah, I was like, I had higher hopes for the song. I thought it was all right. But I like her. Were you guys into this?
I was into it. I'm excited. For me, Colleen Green, like when I first heard Colleen Green, I kind of liked it. And the more I listened to it, the more I liked it. And I'm a pretty big fan, especially I Want to Grow Up, which I thought was great.
What a good album.
I will say one of the cool things about Colleen is she'll just like rip stuff off, but in a winking way, and then incorporate it into her own work, which I think is pretty cool. I think that's what she's doing here. I think twisting the Iggy Pop classic to a somewhat lo-fi Colleen Green style track is interesting. And I do know that this is a little bit better produced than your normal Colleen Green track, but not so much so that it loses the character. So I think this track is cool. I think the album is going to be cool. And I think it's going to be one of the – I think maybe it might be more mellow or more nuanced than perhaps other Colleen Green releases. But I'm excited for this, and I thought the song was good, and I thought the video was good. And Colleen Green played the Punk News Christmas Spectacular with Joe Jack Talcum and Cathy Ramone and was fantastic.
Nice.
And what would you think?
I thought it was really good. I liked the song, and the video was really neat, too. There were lots of dogs, so that was cool. I'd heard handful of songs by her before this, so then it was like, oh yeah, you know, I should actually go back and really listen to her stuff because I like her voice and everything. So that's always a positive.
Well, there you have it. Somewhat mixed response regarding Colleen Green, but I think Colleen Green's gonna, I think it's gonna be a great album. But we'll find out. I'm gonna play a song. Em and Hallie, Hallie and Em, do you guys want to hear retro modern hardcore or classic era acid space punk?
Oh, man. Like both? I don't know. Just go with the first one because you said it first.
Okay. This is a band called Scourge. Scourge is a Santa Cruz band. And they are very much a Santa Cruz hardcore band, or at least a Bay Area hardcore band. They've only put out like two releases so far. They're very much an up-and-coming band. I'm going to play one of their songs, and I'm going to point out that I like Scourge, but I don't love them. But the reason I'm playing it is I think there's real potential there, and I think they might be kind of the next great hardcore band. I mean, they've only put out like two demos, essentially, so you can't like – I guess do the final judgment on them. I would say their demo, their second release, I'm sorry, Scowl, not Scourge, Scowl. The record is called Reality After Reality, and it very much reminds me of early era Ceremony. The singer, I don't know her name, but she's got an incredible voice. The only reason I'm saying it's not amazing, just very good, is for me, like, a lot of the songs are kind of linear in that there's no hook, and you don't have to have a hook, but I like a hook in my hardcore, and I think if you listen to most legendary hardcore, it is pretty hooky. So this is Scowl out of Santa Cruz, a band that I would say to look out for, because I think they might be the next great hardcore band, and if not, at least they're pretty good. So here's Scowl. It's already been 65 minutes. It felt like it's been about 20 minutes. Hallie Bullet, why did today's episode blaze by so quickly?
Why did it? I don't know. It was just, I don't know, because we just have that podcasting magic, baby.
anything you want the listeners to know or to check out, Hallie Bullet?
No, I can't think of anything.
And more, anything you want the listeners to check out. And why did today's episode blaze by in the speed of light? At the speed of light.
I agree. I think it's the podcasting magic. I think it's the – we found the sweet spot, you know?
Indeed. you can't beat that podcasting magic. And we'll see you next week for even more magic. Abracadabra.